Morning. Let's call to order the Senate Health and Human Services Committee for Wednesday, March 21st, 2012. Members and those in the room, we do have four bills on the agenda. I want to make sure that we can get through those. Some of these bills may have a little bit of discussion that we have to attend to, so we're going to try to be expeditious in moving through this. But the first bill we are going to bring up is 2360, which is a Senator Koch bill, but I understand she's not able to be here this morning, and Senator Rosen has agreed to present the bill, and I think we have some testimony, so we'll not ask Senator Rosen to provide a vigorous defense of the bill, but at least get us in the process. Senator Rosen, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is actually a very simple bill, and it's basically just cleaning up something that we passed during special session last year in the omnibus health and human services bill. And it included a provision that changed the definition of a designated rural area for the purpose of the health professional education loan forgiveness program. And that change resulted in a number of professionals, approximately just seven, who had been accepted to the loan forgiveness program but had not yet received any funding to be dropped from the program because the areas they served no longer qualified as a designated rural area. So this bill basically modifies the 2011 law by stating that the change to the definition of the designated rural area applies going forward for applications submitted on or after the effective date of the bill, July 21st, 2011, and not for applicants who had been accepted to the program prior to that date. With me, I have from the Department of Health, Mark Schoenbaum. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Rosen. Mr. Schoenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mark Schoenbaum from the Health Department. I think, Senator Rosen, you described this simple bill very well. As I think all of you know, the state has had a loan forgiveness program for health professionals for many years. It provides incentives to new graduates to practice where they are most needed. Each winter, and in this case in the winter of 2011, the department selects the next group of applicants and tells them that once they go out and seek a job, find a job in an eligible area, we will put them under contract and begin providing them those incentives. We did that in 2011. Those folks went forward in good faith and found jobs. The final budget bill did make the change to the definition of rural that Senator Rosen mentioned. Unfortunately, there was no one around during the shutdown to kind of connect the dots and see that these folks had been affected. So this bill simply, by changing the effective date, grandfathers those folks in and allows us to fulfill our commitment to them.
Thank you, Mr. Schoenbaum. Does this have any fiscal impact, the change that we're making?
Mr. Chairman, it does not. We had already budgeted for these folks. That's all in the works.
All right. Thank you. Are there, Sir Lori?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to say that the department came in and worked with me on this bill, too, and explained it to me early on. And I think it's a really reasonable and excellent provision, and
thank
fully
you.
Support it.
Other questions on the bill? And Sir Rosen, I believe we can just move right to the floor on this.
Right.
Is that your understanding?
Yes. Mr. Chair, then I move that Senate File 2360 be recommended, pass, and sent to the floor.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you,
thank
Senator
you,
Rosen.
Mr.
Thank
Chair,
you, Mr.
Thank you very
Schoenbaum.
Much, members.
Next, members, we're going to take up Senate File 973, Senator Hoffman, Pharmacy Audit Program Bill. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File 973, the Pharmacy Audit Integrity Act, is very simply a bill that establishes standards for how pharmacy audits must be conducted by pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. Some PBMs have adopted audit practices that interfere with service to patients in the pharmacy at the time of an audit. The intent of this bill is to curb abusive audit practices by some of the bad actors while allowing those that do not engage in over-aggressive and far-reaching audit practices to protect against fraud, waste, and abuse. And I do have a delete all amendment that I'd like to move.
And members, I think in your packet you have the A12-0795, which I believe is the delete everything. Is that correct? And that is the amendment, Senator Hoffman, is that correct? The one in the packet?
That is correct. It's the
Senator Hoffman moves the A12-0795 as an author's amendment to Senate File 973. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and the bill is in the form that you wish.
Correct, Mr. Chair. And so now I think to explain the delete all amendment, I will turn it over to my testifier, and I'll let her run with it.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hoffman. Good morning. Thank you. My name is Julie Johnson. I'm a pharmacist and current executive director of the Pharmacists Association here in Minnesota. Speaking on their behalf, I urge you to support Senate File 973. Audits are a vital component to the integrity of all compensated healthcare services. Pharmacists and all members of the healthcare team expect and comply with guidelines set by all of the different bodies that govern their practices. Pharmacists are regulated by state and national rules and statutes, State Board of Pharmacy regulations for licensure, prescription services, federal DEA regulations for controlled substances, pollution control agencies at both federal and state levels for proper handling of waste, and local and county ordinance as well. These guidelines, although numerous and challenging, are based on standards which allow us to comply in a uniform manner. The issue of audits in the pharmacy has been particularly problematic for our members. While one would think that these issues could and should be handled contractually and not make their way to the level of this hearing, this is not the case for pharmacists in Minnesota or pharmacists in many of the other states who have already passed legislation similar to this. At the urging of our members who practice both in chain, small rural pharmacy settings, and also outpatient clinics associated with our healthcare systems, we began work on this issue about 2 years ago. After introducing the bill last year, we took time over the interim to invite the representatives from PBM companies to our St. Paul offices to discuss the audit bill. Subsequent to that meeting, audit department representatives were good enough to come back, meet face-to-face with our pharmacists, so that all parties could begin to gain education and insight about the complexity and often burdensome auditing processes. We believe it to be important that everyone more completely understand the responsibilities and challenges surrounding the auditing process and that parameters around them are necessary. We initiated these meetings with the hope of making changes to the initial bill more palatable to our PBM colleagues. The result is that contained in the new draft. I have real pharmacists here today with me. If it's all right to let Jason Turner share briefly some of the aspects of the auditing challenges in his pharmacy in Worthington. He drove from Worthington this morning to share with us. I also have Joel Kurzman with the National Association of Chain Drugstores and Jeff Lindu, a pharmacist with Thrifty White, simply to answer questions that I anticipate after this. And I'm happy to stay on for those as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Turner, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'm Jason Turner, pharmacist and owner of GuidePoint Pharmacy in Worthington, Minnesota. Thank you for hearing this morning. Just a few quick words regarding it. I'm here representing small business on Main Street, rural Minnesota. I'm also here representing pharmacists, retail pharmacists as professionals across the state of Minnesota. I would actually characterize this as a David versus Goliath type of relationship in dealing with the PBMs. Contracts are written by them for them. Rules are by them, for them, and all are basically take it or leave it. This is corporations that measure profits in millions and billions versus small businesses that, because of these practices, very honestly are hard-pressed to show a profit. This audit bill lays some guidelines to protect pharmacies from predatory practices that we face daily. I have several examples. One that I had faced lately of recent that was 17 claims that were totaled about $7,800. And basically what happens is the very expensive medications are targeted, the ones that would definitely put a hurt on the pharmacies if there was anything done wrong on those. 94% of the medications audited were brand names, whereas 76% of the medicines that I dispense from my pharmacy are generic medicines. The average price of prescriptions audited were $456 per prescription, where the average price of a prescription I fill in my pharmacy is $48. You spend a lot of time gathering information for these audits, because we just can't afford to lose any part of those big dollars. I thought I had everything in line with the recent one that I had faced, and there was one issue where the claim that was submitted as a fax claim rather than a telephoned-in claim from a doctor's office, and we lost the full amount on that. Now, these are not profits. Our margin on these very expensive medicines are generally run less than 10%. So it's definitely money lost. There's a number of other different issues that have been run into regarding prescribing numbers of practitioners and making sure that you have your I's dotted and your T's crossed. And if you don't, whether patient safety is compromised or not, you lose money on this. Compounded medications that are vital for our patients that aren't manufactured by drug manufacturers, I recently lost $2,000 out of $4,000 on an audit because the insurance company said they would not pay me for my professional time in making it. All they would do is pay me a few dollars for the ingredients used. There's numerous other examples, but I just urge you to consider this bill. You know, and the unfortunate part is after audits like we've faced, I as a pharmacist find myself unfortunately starting to pay attention to what I consider less important things than patient safety and more attention to something that's going to keep my pharmacy financially viable. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. There are questions for the witnesses at this point. I would like to ask for some testimony from representatives of the PBMs if they're here and wish to make any comments. And I do understand that we have to do another amendment.
That's correct, Mr.
Chair. So maybe let's wait to do that until we get some testimony from representatives of the PBMs. And so, Mr. Turner, thank you. If you could allow another testifier to come to the table, I'd appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yes, Ms. Johnson.
Senator Hand, I should have done the bullet points of what the bill does. May I do that? It'll just take me 30 seconds.
Absolutely.
Here's what the bill does, Senator Hand and members of the committee. Requires that written notice be sent to a pharmacy of any contract changes. Spells out what PBMs must do during an audit. If an audit involves clinical or professional judgment, it must be conducted by or in consultation with a licensed pharmacist. Spells out what a PBM may not do. They may not come into a pharmacy at the busiest time of the month and demand hundreds of prescription records. The bill lays out criteria for chargebacks or recouping money when an error is found. It states what documentation a pharmacy can rely on to validate that when a claim is questioned. Requires an appeals process. And requires that a PBM must return any money recovered to the plan sponsor. Those are the highlights. So.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Any questions from committee members about the summary of the bill? Okay. Let's get some testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself to the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dave Dietrichs, and I work for Express Scripts. We're a pharmacy benefits manager headquartered in St. Louis, Missouri. We actually have an office here in Bloomington, Minnesota, with about 1,100 Minnesota employees. We administer the pharmacy benefit for over 50 million Americans, including several Fortune 500 companies, as well as labor unions based here in Minnesota. Our largest contract is with the United States Department of Defense, so all of our current and retired military personnel and their families receive their prescription drug benefit from Express Scripts. Our company's mission is to make prescription drugs safer and more affordable, and we do this through a variety of mechanisms, whether it's utilizing generic drugs, negotiating discounts from brand name manufacturers, setting up networks of retail pharmacy networks for our clients, and a whole host of other activities. Let me just state that networks that are consist of retail pharmacies are an integral part of our business. In fact, as a company, we contract with over 56,000 pharmacies in this country. As a company, we adjudicated 750 million prescription transactions last year, and over 90% of those occurred at the retail level. So the pharmacies are an important part of our business model. When we audit, we don't audit capriciously or randomly. We actually have pretty sophisticated computer systems that allow us to do so. And instead of going into the details of this bill, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I would just like to say that we have gotten together with the Pharmacy Association. We are trying to work on compromise language. And so in respect to the time of the committee, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I'll limit my testimony there in hopes that we can find mutually agreeable language that we can move forward with in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Dietrichs. And members of the committee, just if you haven't been tracking with this debate, it has been going on for a year or two, I guess. There's been discussion about various issues that have arisen between the pharmacies and the PBMs. And I have had an opportunity to talk with members of both sides of the debate, and I really appreciate the willingness in the past year for there to be some, I think, productive meetings to try to understand what the issues are. I don't want to characterize either side as either predatory or irresponsible or whatever pejorative words that we want to describe. I think there is a legitimate concern that both parties have in this debate, and I think there's a sincere effort to try to bring some effective and useful resolution to those disagreements. It is my understanding that there is language that has been proposed that is being worked on, that it may not be quite ready to be fully agreed to by both sides. And I understand, Senator Hoffman, you have another amendment that you'd like to offer, and maybe we should do it at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I have Ms. Kavanagh delineate what it is we're proposing?
Mr. Chair and members, first is just a technical change. It's on of the delete everything on page 1, line 8. That should be 151.68 instead of 66.
Okay.
And then on page 2, delete lines 10 and 11. And on page 3, delete lines 19 through 21. And then on line 22, delete the paren B and paren. That's it.
Okay.
The B. What's the last
one? Mr. Chair, what was the last part of that?
Senator Hall. Ms.
On page 3, delete lines 19 and 21, and then on line 22, just delete that B, paren B.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we adopt the amendment, I just wanted to give Mr. Dietrichs, I'm assuming this is not the language that is either the delete all or the change we just made is the prospective agreement, or that it doesn't encompass all the issues. Could you comment a little bit about where we are in this process?
That's correct, Mr. Chair and members. We have taken this delete all amendment. All the representatives of the pharmacy benefit management industry, we got together late last week, early this week, and used this as our starting point, this delete all amendment, and came together on our side, our industry side, and made some agreed to changes which we have submitted to the Pharmacy Association. It's my understanding that they're reviewing those right now. I spoke with Mr. Lemke this morning, as we all did, and we hope to have some of their comments back to us tomorrow. And so we're hoping that that is the springboard that we can use to keep these discussions going and find some mutually agreeable language.
Okay. And from the pharmacy side, can you like to comment a little bit about where we are in the process of resolving the whatever may be left of the difference?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I totally agree with Mr. Diedrichs. We've worked really hard. I think we have a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving companies and members, and to get all of those together to even look and say, here's our stuff, happened way late, night before last, and then I have a big list today. So, we're making progress. We feel really good about the relationship and what we've done so far, and we're confident that we will reach an agreement.
I hope that is a sentiment on both sides. I know this is moving in the other body. It's in a slightly different form, and we're not going to try to attempt to match up with what they are, where they are right now. But I would like to at least make it very clear that it is my hope that there is agreement, that the issues that are open can be resolved, and by the time we see this on the floor, that there will have been whatever resolution that needs to happen. And I'm just trusting that that's in where both parties are and a desire to do it. Senator Hoffman, is that your sense as well?
Mr. Chair, it is. And actually, members, Senator Hahn and I had a conversation right before committee started about Section 3. And he made a suggestion, and I've just, as you see, spoken to both parties, and they're amenable to that suggestion. So, Senator Hahn, if you'd like to offer that amendment to my amendment, that would be...
Maybe I could ask Senator Hall if he would... apparently, part of the debate and the discussion centers around Section 3 of the bill, which is lines 1.21 to 1.31. And the thought was to offer an amendment to the delete all that would remove Section 3. Senator Hall, would you be willing to offer that amendment?
Yep, so moved.
Senator Hall offers a deletion of lines 1.21 through 1.31. And I understand then that this is agreed at this point that we would proceed in this way. And I seeing head nods from people at the table.
Yes, okay. That's correct,
right.
Mr. Chair.
All right.
That is my understanding also, Mr.
Right.
Chair.
Yes, are there other questions? Senator Sharon.
Would you explain what the implications of this are? Because we're making a lot of change here. I really support trying to resolve the issue between the parties, but I know that you can weight things in favor of the existing situation and not help resolve the pharmacy's interest by having continuing conversations. You can continue conversations and continue conversations. And I'm not interested in that. I'm really interested in a resolution to this. And so I'm hoping that all these deletes don't eliminate the guts of what needs to be in place to resolve the issue for the pharmacists. So I'm hoping, I'd like to hear from the author about that.
And Senator Sharon, I share your view and your sentiment on this. And maybe we could hear some comment from the witnesses and Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sharon, I agree. I want to see both parties come together and have some meaningful work done. The deletes that we did are some of the areas where there is contention. They have both agreed that they are going to come together and work on a compromise, and that language makes this bill so substantially different from the House language that we will be in conference committee. So that will give the parties a chance to work on the language and come together at conference, work with the House, and get a bill that everybody will be mildly happy with. And you know how they say about compromise, if nobody's really happy, then it must be a good bill. So that is my goal also, is to see this resolution. Obviously, I represent rural Minnesota, and the majority of the pharmacies in my area, probably almost 100%, are the small pharmacies that feel that they need some protection. So you have my assurances that that is our goal.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Other questions?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hoffman, I'm concerned about deleting Section 3. What we're talking about is very large entities and very small entities, and the contract is what defines their relationship. And to the extent that a large entity can change a contract and not give sufficient notice, gives them a great advantage on this playing field. And so while I'm not going to fight the deletion of this section, I will be watching carefully for fairness in contracting as this goes forward.
Thank you, Sarah Benson, and I appreciate your comment, and I think that we all are interested in that. And I'm glad that both representatives from both sides are here to get a sense of where the committee is on this issue. I think we're all pretty much on the same page, and we're trying to create a structure that will encourage these differences to be resolved before we get to the end of the day. Sarah Laurie.
You know, I guess I'm going to pile on a little bit here and just say I'm reading Section 3, and particularly Paragraph A just says that the PBM can't change the contract almost unilaterally, and I have a hard time seeing why that would be a problematic provision, truthfully. So, I mean, I guess if it's going to be removed today, it is, but it makes me pretty uncomfortable. I think that was a pretty reasonable ask to engage the small pharmacies in the dialogue about contractual changes that are unilaterally imposed on those small providers. I'm going to vote against taking Section 3 out. I mean, I just am. I don't think it should be at this point. And if the negotiations continue and the final compromise doesn't include it, so be it. I would probably vote for the compromise at that point, but I'm not going to vote to get rid of Section 3.
Well, before we have the vote, I just want to go back to our witnesses and maybe Ms. Johnson, you can comment a little bit. It's my understanding that this section of the bill is part of where there is still substantial discussion about how to structure these things, not necessarily that there is disagreement about the desire, but perhaps just the precise structure of it. Could you comment a little bit about this section and just what your sense is on the idea to...
Yes. Thank you, Senator Hahn. Here's what's marked up. Here are the sections we're concerned about. As I looked at this section, I mean, just this morning, and can we agree to look at this? This is one of the ones that we have concern about. But I want to move along. And is this the most important section of the bill? It's pretty darn important, but I want to move along. I understand what compromise is, as do my colleagues. So if that answers we're concerned about it, but there are other sections of the bill we are more concerned about.
Senator Hahn.
Sir Sharon.
I would be interested in your comments as well, but I'm listening to my colleagues talking about Section 3. I share their concerns, and I'm thinking back about my reflection. I think the motivation to come to language to deal with this comes from this staying in the bill. It can always be removed later. I was thinking if it's removed now and nothing reasonable comes up, then we're in that same position where what exists has more power than what the change needs to be. And I think maybe we should be open to having everybody work to change this language, but unless people get to the table to make a reasonable alternative suggestion, that this would be the language that remains in the bill.
Mr. Diedrichs, are you going to make a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members. I'm speaking on behalf of Express Scripts today, but there are several other PBMs that are here with me, and I can tell you that we are in agreement that we want to find a resolution now. We don't want to deal with this again next year or the year after. We want to find something that's agreeable to all parties. So, speaking on behalf of Express Scripts, and I'm sure the other PBMs would get up here and give you the same thing, we want to have an agreement, and so we will continue working with the Pharmacy Association, and it sounds like there's dialogue that needs to occur on a lot of these sections of the bill. So I'm committed to continue working that way.
And Mr. Diedrichs and Sarah Hoffman, by removing this language right now, in my mind, doesn't mean that we are dismissing this idea from the discussion of the two parties. That's my understanding, that we may be removing this particular language, but it doesn't mean that this issue is off the table. That's my understanding. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is correct, and I want to remind the committee that this language is still in the House version that I think is on the floor in the House.
Yes.
So we will be going to conference, and before we get to conference, I fully anticipate that the concerns of both sides will be worked out, and there'll be some language that that we can insert that will make everyone more comfortable. But the language is still in the House version. So this will make the bill. For sure we want to take this to a conference committee. And as you've seen, we've been talking back and forth here. And I do believe both parties are committed to making this work and have a resolution this year.
All right. Thank you. Senator Benson.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Hoffman, and particularly to the representatives of the PBM, I'd like to be clear that there is bipartisan resolution that there will be fairness in contract language before this thing gets off the floor in the Senate.
Mr. Clark, did you want to make a comment? Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. James Clark with Messer Lane Kramer, representing CVS Caremark. And I just wanted, everything that I've heard so far is consistent with CVS Caremark's position. I just wanted to echo that we want to work very closely with the Pharmacists Association and come to a reasonable resolution. We're committed to that.
All right. Thank you. Any other? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, I'm just questioning. Clearly, this bill isn't ready for us to send out, even though you were talking about getting it to conference committee. I think on an issue like this, this body, this group of people around the table does the best work, not, you know, somebody on the floor, not somebody in conference committee. So I'm thinking that we should hold on to this bill until there is an agreement and then send it out to do our best work. That, I mean, we're the folks who know this stuff. And Senator Hoffman's a member of this committee, and, you know, we're seeing a product that's not ready for prime time.
And sir,
as everybody has told us.
And, Sir Higgins, I appreciate your sentiments. I don't necessarily disagree. I am trying to weigh the deadlines and the desire that is, I've heard directly from both parties to move this along, and that they feel they are close. And they, my belief is that if we do this, that the incentive to resolve this longstanding issue will get it done. I'm a little concerned if we take it back and lay it aside for a bit that we may lose the opportunity to reach an agreement. So I appreciate your sense of how this should work, but I, from talking to people on both sides, I think this may afford the best opportunity to bring this to a resolution. So.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, actually, if we leave Section 3 in, that makes this bill more disagreeable to the people at the testifiers' table. We can pass it to conference committee, and instead of leaving status quo in place, which favors one side of the testifiers' table, we're actually compelling that side of the table to come to negotiate. And so I'd ask us to consider that as we're moving this bill forward. Instead of leaving it here to be work done, send it forward to force work to be done so that we don't support the status quo by laying this on the table.
Senator Sharon.
I want to respond to what Senator Benson is saying by asking what I thought I heard you say, Senator Hoffman, was that it was important to you to have this language be gone or be different in our bill so that there was the opportunity in conference committee to negotiate the language, that you need something different in this bill in order for there to be the opportunity for the negotiation. This language is in place in the House final bill. Final bill, correct?
That is correct, Senator Sharon.
So there's a need on your part in order to achieve a goal of improving the language. You can accept the House's language if the group doesn't come with a sincere alternative that you can support. You can accept the House's language back into the bill. But you need us to sort of take what Senator Hahn has asked us to do in order to help you in that process. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Sharon, yes, that is correct. We do need some substantially different language so that we can bring the parties together. There's that protection in the House language that will allow us to adopt their language if they decide not to come together and reach a workable solution for all parties. And you have my word that we will work on this between here and there, and I anticipate that there will be an agreement. based on my conversations with both parties.
Are we relatively satisfied with where we're going here? Any other questions? Well, thank you, Senator Hoffman, and thank you, Mr. Diedrichs and Ms. Johnson.
Chair, Senator, have we moved the amendment?
We have not. I just wanted to express my appreciation on part of the folks involved to be willing to try to bring this to a close, and I hope a useful and productive one. But unless there's other questions on what we're going to do here, Senator Higgins.
After we adopt the amendment, I have a bunch of questions on the actual bill.
All right. Let's. Senator Hall has moved to delete lines 1.21, 1.31. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Senator Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On lines 2.25 to 2.28, I don't understand recoupment very well, so could somebody just explain what those two sections mean in, like, in layperson's language?
In non-industry speak?
Yeah.
Ms. Johnson.
Senator Hand, recoupment means, in pharmacist lingo, means the money they take back that they have paid you. So the take back.
Okay, so on 2.25, it means that it won't be deducted against future remittances and instead shall be invoiced to the pharmacy? Is that what you're saying?
Ms.
Senator
Johnson.
Senator Higgins, yes. The process now, as I am told sometimes, is that audit recoupment is, rather than send you a bill for the audit, it is taken out of the
future payments.
A future remittance. And that some of our members find that problematic.
So okay. So then the next section, Mr. Chair, it says recoupment may not be assessed for items on the face of a prescription not required by the Board of Pharmacy. I have no idea what that means.
Ms. Johnson.
Senator Higgins, from my understanding, there have been times where audits have found an auditing company will require that certain things are on the paper of the prescription, whether it be the front or the back. The face here means on the piece of paper.
Okay.
So the Board of Pharmacy guidelines require us to have certain elements on the prescription blank itself. In some cases, the insurance companies will require other pieces of information to be on the paper copy of the prescription. So if a number or if something isn't on there, they can audit you.
Could you give me an example of Mr. Chair? And I've lost your name. I'm sorry.
Senator Higgins.
Ms. Johnson.
The example that has been provided to me was a number called an NPI number, which is a provider number given to any providers in the healthcare system, that had to be written on the face of the prescription, that they required that. And if you didn't have that on there, then that was something that could be auditable. In other words, they could charge you for that.
Well, that's interesting.
Sir Higgins.
And then, Mr. Chair, did we delete lines 2.10 and 11?
Senator Higgins, we had counsel make note of 2.10 and 11, 3.19 to 3.21, and then a change on line 1.8.
Okay.
And I believe we adopted all those changes, or maybe we didn't. Maybe we need to move those changes right now.
Okay. I'll move them just because, and then I've got some more questions.
All right. Senator Higgins moves the technical change on 1.8, changing 66 to 68, and then the deletion of lines 2.10 and 2.11 on page 2, and lines 3.19 through 3.21 on page 3. And I think we also deleted section 3 previously in the previous amendment. So, on Senator Higgins' motion. Any questions?
Did they say that? Get rid of the B on 322.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Senator Higgins.
And Mr. Chair, section 7, starting on 3.26, there's just a couple of sentences that says, or a sentence that says that somebody can seek mediation. Does that need to be fluffed out any farther, or is that enough to... Is mediation common between these two entities so that a process is already in place, or is this something new, and does it need more detail?
Senator Hoffman or Ms. Johnson?
Senator Hand, Senator Higgins, yes. Again, from what I understand, sometimes there's an appeals process in place and sometimes there isn't. I think that's the real purpose of the bill, is that it's all over the board. With okay. companies that come in and audit us, which they should and they could and they have to and all that, we really would like to know that everybody does it the same way. Because this is the language that passed in the House, I believe this is enough. I don't think it needs to be spelled out any more in statute. It likely would be spelled out more in a contract, I'm guessing.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Senator Johnson, Higgins. You have a lot more faith in the House than I do. Okay, my next question is, as usual, a couple grammar things, Mr. Chair. 4.11 and 12. The sentence that says that auditors shall only have access to previous audit reports on a particular pharmacy conducted by that same auditing entity. The only is in the wrong place, but I can't figure out where it's supposed to go. Where does the only go? Is it they have access only to previous audit reports, or they have access to previous audit reports only by the same auditing entity, or what?
Sir Higgins, that's a good point. Is there clarification of what the intent is there? Please, before we, if you're going to have testimony, we need to have people come to the table and identify themselves.
Patty could whisper to me. Oh. Senator Hand, I have Jeff Lindu, a pharmacist from Thrifty White Pharmacies.
Welcome to the committee,
Senator
please.
Higgins, my name is Jeff Lindu.
Thank you for...
thank you.
It's a bad habit some people think around here, so sorry.
I would say our concern is that the access would be only to records from that entity.
So from that, Mr. Chair, only from that firm.
Yes.
From the same auditing entity. Let's see.
So the intent is to limit that to be perhaps auditors shall have access to previous audit reports on a particular pharmacy conducted only by that same auditing entity. Is that the intent?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So are you suggesting that we delete only on line 4.11 and then
insert after the word conducted on the next
line? On 4.12 after conducted, insert the word only. Are there other
I have another one in the same vein, Mr. Chair.
Before we move that, let's get the rest of them that we've
okay. 3.11 through 3.13. And more than anything, this is just grammatical and I think clarification. I would move the phrase as fraud that's kind of stuck there on 3.13 up to 3.11 after the word consider. An entity may not consider as fraud any clerical da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then on line 3.13, delete as fraud, comma. Insert a semicolon right there. And insert a comma after the word however.
All right.
There are two actual clauses. I think that cleans up that sentence as well.
All right. Are members clear? We are looking at lines 3.11 and 3.13. We're deleting yes. as fraud, comma, from 3.13, inserting the words as fraud after the word consider on 3.11, And then on 3.13, essentially replacing where the comma is with a semicolon and adding a comma after the word however. Any questions on Senator Higgins' motion?
I'll move those two, Mr. Chair.
Senator Higgins moves the corrections made on page 3 as well as the change of the location of the word only on page 4 that we discussed briefly earlier. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Senator Higgins, any other suggestions?
2.21, the due to should be something other than due to. Probably because of. So delete due to on line 2.21 and insert because of.
So on 2.21, you want to delete the words due to and replace with?
Because of.
Because of.
And then I'm done, Mr. Chair, I promise.
Okay.
Can
you say it's a revised
document?
Senator Nino.
Mr. Chair, in that vein, do we even need that qualifier in there?
Mr. Chair, I thought about that. I think that explaining why isn't really a something that should be in statute. So, Senator Nino, I going along your lines of thought, let's delete lines 2.21 and 2.22 instead and put a period at the end of this.
Probably keep unless.
Senator Lurie, what's.
Probably what? Keep unless consented to.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
They take place during the 7 months.
So just delete on line 2. Where I lost it now.
2.21.
Oh, there it is. 2.21. Delete due to the high volume of prescriptions filled during that time.
Yes.
All right.
That's right.
That would seem to make sense.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
Do we want to leave some fingerprints as to why the first 7 days of the month so that somebody doesn't come back in 2 years and say, oh, let's just get rid of all of it and it can be any. I'm fine with whatever the amendment is, but lots of times we look at things and we say, why these 3 days? And we don't know. So.
Senator Hoffman, any advice? It's your bill, in or out. You want the explanation or the more straightforward language?
We have other work to do today.
Senator Hahn.
Mr. Lindu.
It's nice to have it there, you know, as an explanation. It's certainly not critical to the bill. I believe we put it there so that others would understand why we picked the first 7 days of the month instead of the third 7 days. It certainly is not critical to our issue. I'm a pharmacist, not a legislator. and so, you know, whether that intent could be missed at some future point.
All right. And, Senator Higgins, we have a motion. Is that correct? You moved to delete due to through time on line 2.21. So we have that before us. We've got a little bit of a discussion about the pluses and minuses of that. So let's just put it up for the vote. All in favor of the Higgins amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
I believe the ayes have it, so motion carries.
Senator
Sure.
And then may I suggest, and I'm absolutely sick at myself for doing this because I think we have a lot on the agenda to be doing this right now, but now I'm going to join in and suggest if this addresses the issue that Senator Benson raises and you're concerned about, that we describe business days as high-volume business days. The first 7 high-volume business days.
That's good.
Gets the language in there as to what the motivation is. On line 2.2, I would move that we add high-volume after 7 and before business.
All right. Other questions on the motion? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Sharon. I haven't spoken to either side about that addition, but from what I understand from speaking with both sides, it's pretty well an unspoken or unwritten rule that everybody knows the first week of the month is the busiest time in a pharmacy because that's when everybody renews their prescriptions. But I don't have a problem with putting it into the statute so that we have a reason 2-4 years down the road when none of us are here to remember this, that there's a reason why it is in there the way it is. I don't know if either the testifiers have an opinion, but I will defer to them.
Sir Laurie.
Chair. You know, I think that actually adds an ambiguity. The first seven high-volume business days could be the third seven business days.
Okay. I withdraw because I think we need to move on. I withdraw my suggestion and amendment.
All right. Any other suggestions, amendments? And my understanding is that this bill is not going to be required to go to judiciary. Okay. One of the amendments that we offered earlier did remove the provision that would have caused it to go to judiciary, so this will not go to judiciary, but will be referred to the floor. There is no fiscal note. Any further comments, Sarah Hoffman?
No, Mr. Chair, members. I would just ask that we move Senate file, of course, I can't remember the number now. 973 as amended to pass and move to the floor.
Thank you. On Sarah Hoffman's motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you for your work, and thank you for the parties involved for your willingness to work on this as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Senator Hoffman, we do have another bill. If you want to take a moment and gather your thoughts and your materials, we'll take up Senate File 1877.
Are you finished with these?
Yes, thank you.
Breaking me. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Senate File 1877.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate File, well, first of all, before we get started, I do have an A1 amendment at delete all.
I'm not sure we have an amendment here, but maybe we're getting it distributed here. Senator Hoffman, do you want to, I haven't got a copy of the amendment. Oh, here I do. This is the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hoffman moves as an author's amendment to delete everything A1 to Senate File 1877. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. And Senator Hoffman, do you want to talk a little bit about the bill? And I know we've got Mr. Kerber here to offer some testimony. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This bill came to me actually just a short time ago. Last year, as you all know, we started a new department to investigate fraud in the Department of Human Services. And one of the things that I found out through the course of picking up this bill was that the Department of Public Safety has facial recognition software, and they've been doing some things to find the fraudulent licenses that are in their system. But our two departments don't speak to each other, DHS and DPS, and so this bill will give the Inspector General some tools that he will need to hopefully help us find where there is fraud in our system and eliminate that fraud so that we can protect our system for the people that really need that. So for now, I think I will defer to Mr. Kerber, and he can explain the bill and where the department sees this as a helpful tool.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Jerry Kerber, and I'm from the Department of Human Services, where I'm the head of the new Inspector General's office. And First, I'll just say that we're very thankful that Senator Hoffman is doing this delete everything amendment. The bill started out in a very different form than it is now. It's been through no less than three committees in the House, and a lot of work has been done there. And so the amendment that you have in front of you is an amendment that matches almost exactly the House language. There's a slight change in the language about the reporting back to the legislature on the second page. But it's really essentially the language that's been worked out with the Department of Public Safety, the Court Information System, and the Department of Human Services. And so I think first I'll say what the bill doesn't do, and then I'll say what it does do. Unlike the original bill as introduced.
Mr. Kerber, would you pull the microphone close to you?
Sorry, I should have reminded you we do have some acoustical issues here. Thank you.
Okay. What the bill doesn't do is it doesn't change any eligibility requirements. It originally did, but it doesn't now. It also doesn't change the process when that eligibility is being determined. There's no change to what the eligibility worker will do in the interactions they have with the individual. There aren't any additional checking procedures that are done at that point. And those were two things that were pretty important to the department. But what the bill does do is it allows us to access information, essentially to verify information that people have provided. That will indicate whether they are appropriately on one of the programs that are addressed here. And so I'll just talk about this. There's three types of data that are being addressed here. Two are from the Department of Public Safety, and one is from the court system. And as I mentioned, there's no change to eligibility requirements whatsoever. It's just changing the access that the Department of Human Services has to some information. So from the Department of Public Safety, we'll be getting two types of information, and those are reflected in Section 2 and Section 3 of the bill. The first one is related to, as Senator Hoffman mentioned, the facial recognition project that's underway at the Department of Public Safety, where they're underway with some work that has resulting in their determination that the same face may appear on multiple driver's license or state identification cards. And in each of those cases, they're looking at the individual situations, and when they have determined that there's no good reason for that, and after those individuals have had the opportunity to come in and set the record straight and they have exercised all their appeal rights, if in fact there are driver's licenses discontinued for that reason, then we will get the names and identifying information of those people. And so then we'll take that information to determine whether or not those people were using a false identification for purposes of enrolling in one of our programs. The second group is sort of similar from public safety, except that it's more related to the status that they have regarding somebody's legal presence. When you apply for a driver's license or a state ID card, you have to indicate whether you're a citizen or if you're not a citizen. There are a number of other different ways that you can demonstrate that you're here legally. If it's a temporary arrangement, that expiration date is printed on the driver's license or the state ID card. And as that's coming up for expiration, those individuals are notified that it's about to expire and they need to provide updated information. If for some reason they do not provide that information and that driver's license expires for that reason, then we're going to get those names too. And we're going to look at, for those people who have had a driver's license expire because of a legal presence issue, do we care about those people for any reason because they're enrolled in one of our programs? And if we do, then we'll look at that situation to decide whether or not for that person's situation, is there an eligibility issue. Certainly you don't need a driver's license or a state ID card to enroll in the program, so there's nothing categorical about any of this information sharing. There's no automatic decision that's being made in any way. These are just really triggers for a deeper look at that individual case to determine whether the existing standards are being complied with. And the third group is similar to that in that that's the information we're going to be getting from the court system, the MINSIS, the Minnesota Court Information System. There are a couple programs that require people disclose whether or not they have felony drug convictions. And under the current law, it's relevant going back to July 1st of 1997. And so what these do in the other section there, it's really Section 1, requires that the Department of Human Services get information from the court system regarding felony drug convictions under Chapter 152, and then and both kind of an initial project to see what's there, and then on an ongoing basis every 6 months. And then if we get new conviction information under Chapter 152, then we'll compare those new convictions with people who are enrolled in the program. And at that point, then it gets referred to the county again, and those county workers will take a look at whether or not there's an eligibility issue. There are no automatic disqualifications in this bill for that changes anything under the current law. If somebody has a felony drug conviction and they're in MFIP, or the SNAP, the federal food program, what happens is they then have to start, they get drug testing, and there's a vendor payment for utilities and for shelter. None of that changes here. And it's really only after the second failed drug test that under the current law and under this that they would be removed from the program. So it just kicks in those other provisions that are already in the law. That's pretty much what the bill does in Section 4, has us reporting back to the legislature about what are the results of this.
Thank you, Mr. Kerber. Are there questions from Senator Lurie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I have one of Higgins-type amendments. The first section doesn't read very well. I mean, if you eliminate a bunch of clauses, it says the state court administrator shall report of each person. I think it shall be after shall, we need to insert provide a report. And then it'd be, we've eliminated the clauses, you know.
I can't even get to it.
Because I was trying to put that six-line sentence together and really having trouble with it.
Okay, and yeah, it's a lengthy sentence, although I think if you say provide a report, then we'd have to add something.
Well, it would be then, I mean, if you eliminate a whole bunch of clauses and bring it to its essence, the state court administrator shall provide a report of each person who has been convicted is how it would then read. And if you don't have provide of, if you eliminate all the clauses in between, it's the state court administrator shall report of each person, and that doesn't work. You know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, of course, but I was having trouble
Senator
putting
Higgins
that together, and I think this makes it work.
Well, I think, Senator Lurie, I'm not objecting, except that if you read the, so you would just delete?
No, I would just, on line 1.5, after the word shall, insert, provide a.
Right, and if we did that, provide a report every 6 months by electronic means to the commissioner, provide a report, the name. And so there, it does raise some other grammatical.
You're going
grammatical.
Too far now.
So then we need to fix some of the clauses.
I don't disagree that there's
something wrong with this sentence, and I can't read it the way it is.
Mr. Chair, can I help a little bit?
Senator Higgins.
If we move some of the phrases around,
all right.
If we put every 6 months at the beginning of the sentence, then you can scratch that one out. Gets it a little closer. So every 6 months, the court administrator shall report shall report to the Commissioner of Human Services by electronic means the name, address, and all of that. So if you just
I think that works better.
It's
now
a little easier to read anyway. Not totally, but a little.
And then I think Senator Lurie's question of down on 1.8 where we talk about of each person, I think he's not sure that reads well. But I think your Senator Higgins, your suggestion helps.
Yeah.
Of each person.
Perhaps breaking things into two sentences, if all else fails.
Any other suggestions from members of the Senator Higgins?
Well, the other thing you could do is you could say every 6 months the court administrator shall report to the commissioner the following information about each person who's been convicted of a felony. Blah,
I like
blah,
that better.
And then do name, address, date of birth, driver's license, whatever.
I like that better, and I'm just going to ask counsel if can we kind of create that introductory language followed by some, I don't know, what letter 1, 2, 3, or however we do that, or
whatever.
when we do subheadings, when we do a list of criteria in other bills. Does that make sense?
It's a little clearer.
I'm asking our council if they understand that. And, Senator Lori?
You brought up that one of the clauses doesn't work. I'm going to go back to and just say on line 1.5, after the word shall, insert provide A, and then on line 1.6, after the word services, we could put in the word including. So then it would be the state court administrator shall provide a report every 6 months by electronic means to the commissioner of human services, including the name, address, and then everything does seem to flow better, okay. And it gets at what we're working on, and I can read it.
All right. Okay, so we've got two suggestions that Senator Higgins sort of breaking out, listing things independently, and Senator Lori just taking the same language. I'm just going to ask counsel, any thoughts on where we want to go with this language?
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Lori's is shorter.
All right. that's always recommends itself.
But it's whatever the will of the committee.
All right.
I can do either one.
Sir Sharon.
And again, apologizing. I can't believe I'm participating in this.
This is the work of the committee.
But you make it even shorter using Senator Lori's language. Is it necessary on line 1.9 to say who has been? Can't you just say for each person convicted of a felony? That will make it even shorter.
All right. I think that would. So why don't we, and Sir Higgins, out of deference to the shortness of the council's, preference on shortness, Senator Lori, are you going to offer a motion to make that language and incorporate Senator Sharon's suggestion?
Mr. Chair, I move that on line 1.5, after the word shall, insert provide A. On line 1.6, after the word services, include the word including, and on line 1.9, delete the words who has been.
Okay. Any questions? All in favor of the Lori oral amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Other questions on the bill? Anything on the substance of the bill? Seeing none at this point, we do have a list of testifiers that were provided. Some of those folks have indicated that they no longer oppose the bill. I have stricken from my list Alexandra Fitzsimmons and Brian Rushy and also Jessica Webster, Kathleen Wagner, and Dan Kitzberger have all indicated they no longer wish to testify. So I have three people still on the list. And so I'll ask Angel Buchner. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hi, my name is Angel Buchner, and I'm with the Welfare Rights Committee. Since I just got the amendment, like you guys, I'm a little out of sorts, so I mean, please forgive me. I might want just some clarification. So I kind of just want to know, A, how is this going to be paid for? And hopefully we're not using TANF funds, and it could come out of the general fund. And the second thing is the reporting still of drug offenses going back all the way to July 1st of 1997. Anything could have happened between then and now. A person could have, gotten clean since then and is no longer using and is on a good program or doing whatever. And how is that going to affect them if they're getting assistance and you go back to that previous drug offense from 1997 and beyond? So those are just kind of the two points that I had that I want clarification on, or if I could get clarification on.
Okay.
That's kind of my testimony. And I just also that I'm glad that the bill has been, revised a little bit better than what it originally was. So I think there's still some work to be done, and can kind of move forward.
All right. Thank you. Well, let's, first of all, Mr. Albrecht, I'm not aware of a fiscal note. Do you know of any fiscal issues with this bill?
Mr. Chair and members, my understanding is that there is a fiscal note request in, well, the one on the Senate side is before this amendment. The one on the House side is after this amendment. Neither one is complete, and my understanding is that the language in this amendment may produce a small savings, but there may be a small cost as well.
I guess in answer to your question, Ms. Buechner, there may be a savings, there may be a cost. It's a little unclear. We will need to have that before we take final action on the bill. And with respect to the language, I assume you mean on line 1.21, and perhaps, I don't know if Mr. Kerber or Senator Hoffman, if you have any comment about the language in paragraph D on page 1.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll defer to Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair and members, on that issue, the reason this is going back to July 1 of 1997 is because that's, again, kind of what the existing statute refers to. It's after July 1st of 1997 that a felony drug conviction under 152 has meaning. And so if that were to change, then this would change. And I think one of the things that we've already had conversations about is that this activity may prompt some epiphanies about how these laws need to be updated a little bit. The general assistance law is a little different in this regard, in that there's a disqualification, and it's for 5 years. This one for general assistance, you get disqualified for 5 years, but you don't get disqualified if you're involved in treatment or you've completed treatment, or the county makes a determination that you really don't need treatment. And then if you commit a crime, then another one, you're disqualified for 5 years. This one is different in that if you have this felony conviction, then you get drug testing. And under the law, it doesn't really matter how long ago that drug conviction was, even if it was 15 years ago. Then you undergo some random drug testing, but the randomness is not defined anywhere. And so there are some vague things in the law that I think, as we collect this data and hopefully in our reporting back next year, we're going to have some better understanding of maybe how those laws can be made more consistent.
Thank you. Ms. Buechner, any other questions at this point?
Just one other. Just the point of, like, the vague where you just say drug felony. What do you mean by drug conviction or felony? I mean, there's numerous things under that. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be a small amount or it could be paraphernalia. I mean, what do you mean? Just everything that has to do with drug conviction?
Ms. Buechner, I believe, and I'm not on the Judiciary Committee, but I believe this bill will have to go to the Judiciary Committee. I think a felony drug conviction or a felony drug offense is defined in statute pretty precisely. So I'm not sure that this is a term that refers to a specific set of offenses that is defined in statute, but I would prefer to let the Judiciary Committee take that up.
Okay.
Senator Hayden.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our testifiers. I think I was just looking it up, as you said. So in Chapter 152, it goes into great detail in the statutes as to what a felony drug conviction is. We can talk about it after, but I'll show you in chapter. It defines exactly what that is, and it could be all the things that you said.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I do have two other witnesses who'd like to testify, Kim DeFranco and Darnella Wade.
Darnella couldn't make it today.
Okay. So are you Ms. DeFranco?
Yeah. I'm Kim DeFranco. I'm from the Minnesota Coalition for a People's Bailout. And not to harp on the felony offenses, but one part is a convicted felony, but then I read in the bill, sorry, I don't know where I read it, but it's just drug offenses. So that might be some confusing language. But, even though there isn't many of the harsh things that were taken out of this bill, it's still, in our opinion, we're not going to like this. What we really need to have, because this really doesn't this doesn't really solve the issue of poverty and why people are poor, and especially during this economic crisis, because this still can put people in dire straits. I mean, if you're convicted from a felony, drug felony, and you're disqualified, where are you going to go? What life are you going to have? Where are you going to turn to? So instead of kind of like beating down people, especially when they need help, we should be thinking how to raise money, you know, taxing the rich, taxing the corporations, and putting that money into real poverty-ending programs.
And Mr. Franco, I want to just interrupt you. I appreciate your sentiments. However, those are a little far afield from the bill we have before us, which is really trying to make sure that there's a, or suggesting a process to make sure that the existing qualifications are verifiable. That's really what this bill does. So you're raising points that are certainly worthy of debate, but I would just encourage you to focus on what we're talking about here and which is the bill itself.
Okay. Well, we're going to have problems with the drug felony conviction. You should just take that out. And the data sharing department, or the Department of Human Services, that just may be a slippery slope to something else, keeping tabs on people. But like I said, you know, I mean, it does, you all can, you know, get money to help build anti-poverty programs, which is still a part of this committee. That's all.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Franco. Are there questions? Senator Higgins.
Mr. Chair, if somebody has a new drug conviction at the felony level, it's likely that they'll go off to incarceration. Does the family of that person, if he or she was receiving benefits, I guess my question is, what happens to the family? Can the other parent be eligible and continue to take care of the family? Mr. Kerber, give us some advice.
Mr. Kerber, can you answer that for us?
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, the way this works in the existing statutes is that if there is an individual in that household who does lose the benefit, then the benefit to that household is decreased by that individual's amount.
Okay.
But that there's not an impact on the rest. And so even if I have a child and I lose my benefit, that doesn't mean my child loses the benefit.
Okay.
All right. So it really just affects that person.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Kerber, if that is a single head of household family, how does that benefit get to the child if the parent is incarcerated? I assume there's a guardian or something that will be involved.
Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair and Senator Higgins, one of the things that happens here is that there's some vendor payment arrangement made, so the shelter and utilities are paid by the state.
Yeah.
So that's taken care of. And then the food benefit, I think, you know, as clumsy as that sounds, I think it's still going to be the parent who's going to be purchasing the food. That isn't really their benefit anymore, it's their child's benefit.
Okay.
And so it's really just removing that amount of benefit from that household.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Is there, you know.
I'm just wondering if where this bill goes after.
It has to go to judiciary. I think that we would need to have it come back to get the fiscal note sorted out. So I don't want to hold up the process. So I think we'll send it on to judiciary and then request that it come back so that we have the fiscal note. Is that okay with you?
Mr. Chair, that's all right with me. Thank you.
Right. Seeing no other questions, Senator Hoffman moves the Senate File 1877 as amended be recommended pass, referred to the Committee on Judiciary. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Thank you to our testifiers, Mr. Kerber. Ms. Buchner and Mr. Franco.
Thank you, Mr. Chair members.
Members, we do have a couple more bills that we need to try to get through before Friday. We are planning to meet on Friday in this room at, I believe, 9 o'clock, although we also have just found out this morning Finance Committee meeting at 9 o'clock Friday. So maybe a little bit of a of a exercise to get people back and forth, since I know there are members on both committees. I don't believe we have a lengthy agenda. We may be trying to take up the Department of Health's DNA screening bill. They do need to have that, and we are trying to get that through the process. We're going to need to get a exemption, I think, from Rules Committee to deal with it, but we'd like to try and do that. So I don't believe we have a lengthy agenda on Friday, but we probably will have a couple bills. So, and we will be back here at 9 o'clock Friday. Thank you, and we are adjourned.